Now, the Wild About Pets radio show, the place to learn something new about household pets and wild animals. Here's your host, educator and naturalist, Susan Frank.
Hello. Welcome to Wild About Pets, the place we talk in depth to leading authors and experts about all topics regarding household pets or wild animals. To make your listening experience more enjoyable and meaningful, I created a companion website, wildaboutpets.net, that allows you to see photographs of the animals we'll be talking about on the show today. To see these pictures while you're listening, click the purple Look While You Listen button you see inside today's episode page, dated July 23rd, or if you are on the Talk Zone homepage, also click the purple button. That'll take you to my website and the Look While You Listen photos. Does your cat do things that both enchant, amuse, mystify, and frustrate you? As adorable and beloved as cats are, some of their behaviors can become problematic. Has your cat stopped using its litter box? Does it bite you for absolutely no apparent reason? Is it destroying all your furniture by scratching? Today, my guest is Dr. Deborah Horowitz, a veterinary behaviorist, which means she is an animal behavior specialist, and we're going to talk about cats, their natural behaviors, some of the possible causes for the negative actions, and best yet, what to do to help the situations. You'll definitely want to call in or email your questions today. Welcome, Dr. Horowitz. I am thrilled to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Susan.
Dr. Deborah Horowitz is a board-certified veterinary behaviorist from the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, a doctor of veterinary medicine, an accomplished author, one of the Purina Cat Chow mentors, which means an advisor on catchow.com who answers your pet behavior questions, and is also a consultant on Animal Planet's show, House Cat House Call. We'll talk a little bit more about that today. Again, I have some cute animal photos that will illustrate our conversation. So to see them, click that purple Look While You Listen button that you see inside of the today's episode page or on the Talk Zone homepage. And that'll get you to my website, wildaboutpets.net. Our phone lines are also open today. It's July 23rd. We are streaming live right now. If you'd like to ask Dr. Horowitz a question about your cat's behavior, call 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748, or you can email me a question at susan@wildaboutpets.net, and you'll find that phone number and that email address again at the top of the page of photos. So let's get started. Dr. Horowitz, what is a veterinary behaviorist, first of all?
Well, it's sort of self-explanatory in some ways. Obviously, I'm a veterinarian, and I've been a veterinarian for quite some time. And behavior in 1993 became a board-certified specialty within veterinary medicine. Like in human medicine, veterinary medicine has specialties. Surgeons, internists, nutritionists, pharmacologists, and behaviorists. So when you are a specialist, it means that you've had advanced training in your specialty area. You have published a peer review paper, meaning that you wrote a research paper on the area that you hope to specialize in, that was published in a journal that was read by a group of your peers. You also then submit three case reports about cases you've seen that are then read by a group of your peers and hopefully passed. And then when you do all that, you get to sit for a two-day exam that certifies you, so that when you are going to see a board-certified veterinary behaviorist, you're seeing someone with advanced credentials. Unfortunately, anyone can call themselves a behaviorist outside of veterinary medicine. In veterinary medicine, you're only allowed to call yourself a specialist, use that IST designation, if you are actually board certified. So that there are people who call themselves behaviorists, but you do want to make sure that you know what their training is, so that it's kind of a general term outside of veterinary medicine. In veterinary medicine, it means that we have advanced specialty training in the field of behavior.
Now, We're going to be talking about cats today, but a lot of people are very familiar with the idea of dog trainers, even though when we talk later about the show you're on, Animal Planet's House Cat House Call, we'll talk a little bit about the idea that, you know, cats can be trained also. But because people are familiar with this, what I'd want to ask now is, what is the difference really between a dog trainer and when they'd be called in for help and a behaviorist, Dr. Horwitz?
Well, first of all, training is to teach specific tasks. So there are some behaviors that animals do that are unwanted, but they may be changed by training them to do something else. But, and those might be normal behaviors, like jumping up or pulling on leash, or even a cat that gets on your counters. That might well be a training issue. They need to be trained to do something else. But then a behavior issue are issues where not only the behavior might be normal, it could be abnormal, but it could be dangerous, or it could be dangerous to humans or the pet. Mm. For example, aggression.
Mm-hmm.
Aggression is not a training problem. Many aggressive dogs are very well trained. What we're talking about is an underlying emotional state where the dog or the cat feels that they need to use an aggressive communication response to change the outcome of a situation, usually because they're fearful or anxious about the social encounter that they're in. So training focuses primarily on teaching specific tasks, and behavior. A behaviorist is going to focus on finding out why you're doing something or the pet's doing something and teach the pet new tasks, but also work at changing the underlying emotional state. So, for example, if you teach your dog to sit at the door, but it still doesn't like people coming in your house, and it still might bite people, right?
Sure.
So you need to teach the dog that people coming into the house is not something to be agitated about.
You know, that reminds me of talking about aggression in my cat. And we'll talk a little bit later about when they seem to bite for no reason. As I mentioned in my introduction, my cat, Willie, sometimes when people would come in the house, Dr. Horwitz, would really attack people's feet and ankles. And it was sporadic, and I never knew why my cat did that. So you just gave me a maybe possible clue that we'll have to talk about a little bit later. About
okay.
That. Well, now, you have mentioned that there are some most common issues that cat owners have with their pets. And you had mentioned two of them, then I have photographs of them. So let's talk about two of those.
Okay.
What would you say are the most common issues?
The most common issues that get referred, and also probably people mention to their veterinarian, are house soiling issues where the cat is going to the toilet someplace other than their litter box, mm-hmm. or is urine marking, using urine to mark a spot in a home. And the other common issue is aggression. And although there is aggression towards people, which certainly is serious, there's also a lot of issues with people having their cats within their household fight. It's very common now for people to have multiple cats. And when we try to combine those households, we have to think about a few things if we want them to be harmonious.
Speaking of litter, I do have a question that just came in. Many people do email me, Doctor. And here's one from Ivy from Highland Park, Illinois. Her cat, Jasper, who's a rescued cat, used to use the kitty litter in the basement, but then I let it get dirty, not cleaning it every day, and he started defecating in the basement, off in a corner. So he, I know, uses two other boxes in the house, but in the basement, he stopped using that litter box. Do you have any thoughts or suggestions on this?
Well, I don't know if I have enough information. I don't know if Jasper is an only cat.
Yes.
So if he's an only cat and he is an older cat and he's recently become, has started to defecate in the basement, first thing I would think about is medical examination. There are lots of intestinal reasons that cats may no longer defecate in their litter boxes. They may defecate more frequently. They can have food-related intolerances. They can have irritable bowel disease. They could have parasites. So if this is a relatively new behavior for this cat, I would first start with a veterinary visit.
Okay.
And make sure that the cat is healthy. One of the first questions that I ask myself, especially in an older cat,
Well, it's actually only 2 years old, and it is a rescue, and doctor, it does use two other litter boxes in the house.
But does it use the two other litter boxes for defecation?
I think so. I believe so.
Then that cat's defecating quite frequently, and again, that's not normal.
Okay.
Okay? A cat usually defecates one, maybe two times a day. If this cat is defecating more than that, in other words, using those other litter boxes and also defecating in the basement on the same day, I would consider that not to be normal. So a medical exam is certainly necessary. And some cats want a very pristine litter box, and they want one box for urine and one box for stool.
Oh, all right. Well, now that's interesting. So I know this person who wrote. She's a friend of mine, and he started using the one in the basement, and now he's stopped. So there has been a change in behavior there.
Well, of course, in this kind of format, it's hard to know everything.
Right.
When I see a behavior consultation for an animal that's not using their litter box, our initial consultation probably is an hour and a half. There are lots of reasons cats might not use their litter box. Cleanliness is one of them. It might be the location that the cat doesn't like. It's also important that someone keep a baseline recording of how often does your cat urinate and defecate in a 24-hour period? Which box are you cleaning when? So sometimes people do put in extra boxes, which isn't a bad idea, but they may say, well, I'm only going to scoop one box a day instead of scooping all three boxes, which mm-hmm. is certainly time-consuming, but it may not be what the cat wants. So that there are many things that we need to look at when that's the case. So just because a cat starts using a litter box in one location, when they stop, that may or may not be relevant that they used it before. What we have to think of, well, what might be keeping them outside the box at this point in time?
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much, Doctor.
You're welcome.
Let's talk a little bit about, and Ivy, thank you for your question. Let's talk about the aspect of getting along with one another. And I have some photos showing, you know, this adorable group of little kitties. They're all, you know, cuddled together. There's two playing. This is picture number four. It doesn't look like it because we got a white cat, you know, kind of chewing on the ear of kind of a gray, tabby-looking cat, but they are playing. And then a photograph of something I've used to observe at my sister's house, who had three cats, and one of the cats would take after and really attack another one. Doctor, what can be done when this happens in a household?
Well, like I said with house soiling, the issue really is first understanding the social nature of cats. Cats can be social and live in groups, and cats can live a solitary lifestyle. So they have quite a diversity of social behaviors in the way they will live their lives, and they also have differences in personalities. So some cats are very social and bold and outgoing, and other cats are more timid and shy. And some are very bold, outgoing, and kind of bossy or bullyish.
Mm-hmm.
And if we combine a household of cats, we may not take into consideration their early history. Maybe they're a cat that prefers to live alone. Second, we might not take into consideration their individual personalities. So a very bold, outgoing cat may really like to be everywhere and sleep with another cat, and a very shy, timid cat prefers to sleep by itself in a chair. And that might not be a good mix.
Mm-hmm.
And then another reason that cats might have disagreements is this distribution of resources.
Mm.
We do know from some types of research that have been done that cats don't really share place equally. So everybody seems to know, oh, I have three cats, I need three litter boxes. But very often, they put the litter boxes all right next to one another. And really, then all you have is one toileting area. So what you want to arrange is more than one toileting area in the house, because if the cats don't share the space equally, they might not have access to where a litter box is. The same is true with food bowls and resting areas and climbing towers. Because, again, not every cat is going to have that same social affiliation. We also know that cats tend to form pairs, so they pick which cat they like,
mm-hmm.
and they associate with that cat. And then there might be another cat that they actively avoid. They don't even want to be near that cat. So, again, if someone with multiple cats in the house, and you might have a cat who's kind of a swinger, he goes between all the groups. But if you look at your house of multiple cats, often people can say, you know, Emma and Lucy sleep over here, and Fred and Teddy sleep over here, and Sam sometimes sleeps with Emma and Lucy. Sam sometimes sleeps with Fred and Teddy, but Fred and Teddy never sleep with Emma and Lucy. Mm-hmm. So that's telling you something about the social dynamics within your home.
Mm-hmm. Now, my sister had a male cat that, a younger male cat that started as the female cat, Rachel, became older, very viciously attacking her. And often they just were very unsure of what to do. I know you don't know the whole case history, but do you have any suggestions when one cat is continually, when, you know, they weren't keeping an eye on it, attacking another cat? And how does one stop that or break that pattern?
Well, again, it kind of goes back to that underlying reason. It would be a normal behavioral pattern for cats when they reach social maturity that happens between 2 and 3 years of age to either leave their social group. So if we're talking about cats that are living in a dairy barn, for example, between 2 and 3 years of age, the male cats might leave their social group because the other tomcats might chase them away, or they might chase away some other cats and establish their own social group. So even though this situation, the cats were not necessarily related to one another, there is a social tendency, which makes sense if we look at it, is that if you're a male cat raised in a dairy barn, and the only other female cats around are related to you, if you want to breed, then either you have to leave, or you have to chase those females away and bring in some others, because you're not going to breed with animals that are related to you. So that behavioral pattern, when we look at it within the context of this dairy barn where they're related, makes sense. But that behavior pattern might be repeated again in the household, even though those cats aren't related. So cats may be attempting to stake out territory within that individual household. And again, it often goes back to how things are arranged within the house that, again, we don't necessarily think about. Just because everybody comes in the kitchen to eat doesn't mean that they really share the kitchen space. Maybe one cat would feel better eating in the bedroom where they spend all their time, and having a litter box in a place where they spend all their time. And when they venture out, they become a target for the other cat. So that from the cat standpoint, it makes sense. This doesn't make sense to us.
Right. Well, exactly. And that is so interesting, Dr. Horowitz, because I hear that often we see the problems from our own human point of view and perspective.
Well, how else are we going to look at it?
Sure, sure, and never really think about the idea that this is all about what the cat's experience is like. That's great. Now, I do have a caller, so let me welcome Ellen. You have a call for Dr. Horowitz. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a cat. She's six, and she misinterprets the signals when a human being blows their nose or is trying to clear their nose, and, you know, somebody in the house has allergies, that she interprets it as a hiss. She looks startled. She looks upset. She looks like her feelings are hurt. And then sometimes she gets mad and starts to hiss and swat back at you.
Oh, no.
Like you're starting a fight and all you're doing is blowing your nose. Slowly she's learning that no aggression was intended. But, like, we're speaking cat and we don't intend to.
Well, I don't know if she thinks it's a hiss, because I, too, suffer from allergies. And my sneezing doesn't sound like a hiss, and neither does my sniffing. But it doesn't sound like a hiss either. But it may be frightening. That doesn't mean it's not frightening. It doesn't mean it's not unexpected. And it doesn't mean that it might be, to the cat, something threatening. We certainly can't control when we sneeze or maybe when we blow our nose. But one thing we can try to do is to keep a little bowl, or maybe a jar with a top, because cats are sneaky, of treats nearby. And we do kind of know when we're going to blow our nose, and we might reach for a little treat and give it to the cat and then blow our nose so that the cat learns that, okay, actually nose blowing means good things happen to me. And if the cat doesn't like the treats, maybe we need to put some cream cheese on our finger, and if we don't live alone, we can have somebody help us. But we help the cat realize that the noise has nothing to do with them. In fact, it might actually mean good things.
Ah, to diffuse that fear. Well, that's a great answer. Thank you for your question, Ellen. We are going to take a break. Stay tuned. We'll be back with a lot more right after this.